Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pastor Eli James here with another installment of Yahweh's Covenant People. We're going to be continuing our installment of 1 Corinthians and demonstrating that Paul is neither a universalist nor an antinomian, and he, in fact, is a very much exclusive proponent of the 12 tribes of Israel. And he doesn't teach anything like we should all save, we should save all the races from whatever fate Yahweh has in store for them. That's up to Yahweh to decide. We've been wasting our time. In fact, I just got an email from a friend in South Africa saying that the border between Zimbabwe and South Africa is just absolute chaos. You cannot get through without paying somebody a $50 bribe, and nobody, none of the government officials give a damn. And, that's what you get for electing, a black representative government. Of course, we're hard on their heels trying to do the same thing, stupid Americans. But you can just look at South Africa and Zimbabwe and the way those two countries are going, where white people are being murdered at will and the government is calling, they're actually bounty hunters on white people, white farmers especially, where you can kill white farmers, take their land, and the government says, oh, you're so good. And so, folks, this is the result of trying to evangelize the non-Israelite peoples of the world, okay? And Bill, what's your opinion of that?
My opinion is on my blog in an article I wrote called White Liberal Misogyny.
Okay.
Loving the other races is hatred of your own race.
Right.
Because the other races, they hate you.
Yeah.
And if you're too stupid to know it, it's your own fault.
Okay. Brett wants to know, besides my website and yours, and let me just quickly announce mine because we haven't been doing this on our shows. My website is anglo-saxonisrael.com. Again, that's anglo-saxonisrael.com. And my email address is eli-james@sbcglobal.net. And Bill, why don't you give yours out and then the Cliff and Emmenheiser site as well?
Right. Christogenia.org. Christogenia.org. And for Cliff and Emmenheiser's site, just put Emmenheiser.Christogenia.org.
Okay. You don't have to have the triple W.
All of Clifton's teaching letters are posted. Every one of Clifton's essays, a couple of his longer works, like the book-length works. There's the Comparé Your Heritage series.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Annotated by Clifton is freely available there.
Yeah.
All in PDF files.
Yes.
The Revelation series that's annotated by Clifton and myself is freely available there. There's enough information just on Clifton's site and to keep a guy studying for 2 years.
Right. Yeah, because Brett asks who else can we consult about 2 Seed Line.
On Christogenia.org, you'll find an overview, which so far I've only done the first 5 chapters of Genesis, but it's getting there, and my entire New Testament translation is posted there, and probably 50 of my essays, plus my blog.
Okay, yeah, it's hard to say how many other, Israelite would have contained a lot of 2 Seed information,
right,
including the works of Willie Martin.
IsraeliteWatchman.com, Israel Elect, which is IsraelEct.com.
Yes.
There's a lot of good stuff at a lot of Israel identity websites, but there's a lot of stuff that I think is marginal too.
Yeah.
So
anyway, a lot of them promote the 2 Seed Line, sometimes their own version of it, disregarding even the teachings of Bertrand Comparé and Dr. Wesley Swift. And, those are the two gentlemen who primarily have been teaching that and are the inspiration for me. I don't know about you.
Well, I've often admitted that my inspiration in 2 Seed Line is Wesley Swift and Bertrand Comparé.
Yeah.
And also E. Raymond Capps.
Right.
However,
Those
gentlemen also need to be modified in many places.
Right, yeah.
And I hope that, 20 years from now, somebody's going to say that of me.
Right.
And I'm sure it'll happen. But, we can't get into a, while we are indebted to past Israel identity teachers, I strongly recommend that we not put any of them on a pedestal because, sure. you know, that leads to a, that leads to cultic,
idol worship.
Right, basically.
Yeah. Maui, you have a question or comment? Okay. Apparently just listening on the phone. And, okay, well, see, we have Southern California. The show hasn't started yet. Southern California, you have a question or comment?
Yeah, I just was, I had a Mexican over here was telling me they were a Christian.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Okay, and I sit there listening. I says, and I said something, and this Mexican, of course, does not like whites. He has all things against the whites, but they're Christians.
Yeah, okay.
And that's what they're saying. And I had some blacks, of course, we know about the black liberation, that basically says they're Christians and we aren't.
Uh-huh, right.
Now, a lot of people have come up to me and said, well, they're Christians, we're all the same. And, of course, I disagree, and they get... And they tell me, well, Jesus loves them even though you have a racial difference.
Okay.
And I said, and here was my answer. You know, Eli, you have your daughter, okay, and yourself and your wife. Now, if somebody come up to you and says, Eli, we like you a lot. You're great. You're this, you're that. You're the best thing, you know, and what have you.
Yeah.
The worst thing in the world is a sycophant, let me say.
Right, exactly.
I'm
yeah.
sorry, go on.
I'm always on the alert for those kind of people. Yeah.
No, but what I'm trying to say is that then they start slapping your daughter and your son around.
Right.
And calling them names and it just being just awful to your kids.
And they still
say they
to be
like
Christian.
You. You know,
right.
Now this is what I tried to explain something. I'm pretty sure that you and Bill might be able to explain it a little further. In other words, if you slap the children of Israel around and say you don't like them and do all the same things that all these other races are doing to us and then say we like your Father Jesus,
right.
You know, your Lord, we like him,
yeah.
You know, and he likes us. I have a problem with that.
Right, right.
I thought maybe you and Bill might want to kick that around.
Yeah, well, Bill, if you want to go ahead and answer that, I'll go ahead and mute Gary there.
I don't even entertain the notion that they could be non-white Christians.
Okay.
I stood in prison dormitories and told 150 beasts that's just what they are.
Right.
They're beasts.
Right, right.
You know, that's I can't even countenance that because
mm-hmm.
– It's not an acceptable situation that a non-white be considered a Christian.
Yeah, and they certainly can't tell us what the scriptures mean. I know we had a couple incidents on our show in the past where blacks have called in and tried to tell us what scripture mean, and you know, we can't.
Right,
handle that.
I won't even entertain a universal. I can't countenance it. It's just pure error, and there's no arguing with somebody of another race.
Right.
That
right.
they can't be Christian. I mean, it's like convincing a wall it's not flat.
Yeah, well, they're not Israelites.
Or that it's flat and it doesn't believe it's flat. Whatever.
They're not Israelites. The Bible wasn't written for them, to them, or about them. And so any white people who told them that it is too for and about them is a liar. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. But I just want to make one more comment, though. In the emails I've been putting out, the newsletters I've been putting out lately, I did have a chance to look at all 8 episodes of the Michael Heiser, I call it 2C line, but Nephilim story, his interpretation of the Nephilim. He comes as close to 2C line as you possibly can. The only mistake, he only makes a couple mistakes where he says Adam is humankind, you know, meaning all races, but he definitely says that the Bible teaches racial hybridization between the fallen angels and human beings, and that Yahweh instructed the Israelites to exterminate their offspring in Canaan land. Okay?
Right, and now we have scholars admitting that this happened.
Yes.
And we have a biblical account that the Israelites were instructed to exterminate them and failed.
Yes.
Now, the key to our belief system, the key to Christian identity is simply recognizing who those people are in the world today.
Right, right.
That's it. That's yeah. that. I mean, if scholars admit that this happened, independent scholars who are not a part of Two Seed Line or Christian Identity. We only want to recognize who these people are, and they can be traced down through the Bible.
Right. And that was the other mistake he made. He didn't identify who their descendants are. And of course, he also makes the mistake of identifying the Israelites with the Jews. Okay. So, there's three major mistakes. But nevertheless, it was really nice to see somebody outside of Christian Identity confirm the Two Seed Line hypothesis. He even went to the point where he didn't say that he agrees with it, but he said some people even say that Cain's father was not Adam, okay, and may have been Nahash, one of the fallen angels. So, ladies and gentlemen, this belief system, this fact, this factual interpretation of the Bible is getting out there, folks. It's going to be in people's consciousness real soon, and then they're going to take the last step and they're going to understand who they really are, who their descendants are today. Okay, very good. Let's get back into the book of 1 Corinthians. We completed through chapter 7 last time. Let's go right into chapter 8. Now, as touching things offered to idols, okay, the subject is offering things up to idols. We know that we all have knowledge, okay, or experience. Knowledge puffs up, but charity edifies. What's wrong with this first sentence in chapter 8 here, Bill?
Well, it's the grammar. The King James did not recognize the grammar.
Okay.
All right. Now, concerning the things offered to idols, we know. Now, we have to stop and put a comma right there in my translation.
Yes.
Okay? Because Paul, the next word begins a clause that's a parenthetical statement. Okay? And this parenthetical statement goes through... I have so many notes here I can't say. It goes through the end of verse 3, okay? And then Paul repeats himself sort of at the beginning of verse 4, where he says, concerning then the eating of things offered to idols, at the beginning of verse 4. So he says, now concerning things offered to idols, we know, and the rest of this statement up to the end of verse 3 is parenthetical.
Okay.
And he says, because all the knowledge we have, the knowledge inflates, but love builds.
Right.
If one supposes to have known anything, not yet does he know according as there is a need to know. But if one loves Yahweh, this he knows by him.
Okay.
Now what he's saying is that knowledge inflates, and that's true. The more knowledge one has or that one thinks one has,
yes,
the harder it is to be humble.
Right.
That's just the way it is. It's a natural law of brain physics, I guess. I don't know.
Right. And if what you know is wrong, it's harder to unlearn it, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
It's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if one supposes to have known anything, not yet does he have need, according as there is need to know. There is always more to learn, and there are many more important things which we do not know that we don't, well, you know, the way Paul says this, I believe, you know, that he's saying that a greater knowledge will be revealed in the future and that these people can't possibly know it. You know,
right.
It's not theirs to know.
Right.
But if one loves Yahweh, this he knows by him. That's what's important. Nothing else is important.
Very good.
This is of the utmost importance, to have a sincere heart before Yahweh.
Yeah. And obviously the world at large, many of whom claim to love God and never think twice about him. Even when they attend church, they don't really think about him. And so, and they call themselves Christians too. So that word Christian gets bandied about, and the word theist gets bandied about. And, you know, it's kind of like, the vast majority of people, in my opinion, don't really believe God or love God and never think twice about him. You know, and so it's a sad state of affairs. Okay?
Right. And we're told constantly throughout the Bible, you know, especially in the Psalms, meditate on his word.
Right.
People think they know God and they don't, because they don't meditate on his word.
Yes, they absolutely do not. Yeah, and the Bible is the book that collects dust on every coffee table on the planet. Okay, verse 4. As concerning, therefore, the eating of those things that are offered in sacrifice to idols, we know that an idol is nothing in the world and that there is no other God but one. Okay, that's pretty, fairly self-evident, okay? For though there be there be that are called gods, whether in heaven or in earth, as there be gods many and lords many, but to us there is but one God, the Father of whom are all things, and we in him, and one Lord Jesus Christ by whom are all things, and we by him. So isn't he simply castigating those potential Christians here who still worship idols?
Right. And what he's saying in verse 5 here is, and even though there are so-called gods.
Okay.
All right. And that's the way the word legomenoi is used. And in this context, it means said to be gods. You know what I mean?
Right.
Doesn't mean, Paul's not saying there are other gods.
Right. Okay.
Okay. He's saying there are other so-called gods.
Right.
Either in heaven or on the earth, just as there are many gods and many lords. And he's not talking about reality. He's talking about the perception of people.
Right.
But to us, to Israel, there is but one God.
Right. Certainly to us. Yes. Okay. Verse 7. However, there is not in every man that knowledge. Okay. And every man would be every Israelite or dispersed Israelite, Judahite,
or
Israelite.
The word man isn't even in there in the Greek. I'm sorry.
What's not in there in the Greek?
The word man isn't even in there.
Oh, really?
In the Greek. Yeah.
Okay.
The word man's not in the Greek.
Okay. But obviously the context is.
It's inferred, right? But
right.
But yet not in all is that knowledge.
Right. Okay. For some with conscience of the idol to this hour eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. So in other words, it sounds like what he's saying, because they have offered it to an idol, they're weak and their conscience is defiled.
Right. And you know, my translation says, but some in custom of the idol. Okay. And the Textus Receptus actually followed the Codex Bazai, which is really, I like to call it the Codex Bizarre, because it has an awful lot of variations from the other ancient codices.
Uh-huh.
And it's conscience, it should say, but some in custom of the idol, in the custom of the idol. In other words, the temple custom.
Right, right.
And in order to understand these verses that Paul's speaking about here, it has to be understood that in the ancient Greek world, pagan temples were the centers of social life.
Right.
Okay. They were much like our modern, whether it be the Masonic Temple, the Elks Lodge, the Moose Lodge, the Lions Club. They're almost the equivalent of pagan temples. People gathered and met. They practiced rituals in them. They ate. They drank. They fraternized. They made business deals. And then beyond that, in the temples of the ancient world, animal and meat markets were attached to the temples.
Okay.
And we see this in Jerusalem, that Jerusalem had become like the pagan world.
Mm-hmm.
Jerusalem, you know, Yahshua Christ went into the temple, and what did he do? He drove out the merchants of animals and birds.
Right.
And told them to beat it. That the
right.
House, you know, this is a house of prayer and not a bazaar, not a house of trade.
Right.
That is representative of what went on in the pagan temples.
Sure.
You could not, in Corinth or in Rome or in Athens or in any large city, you couldn't go to a butcher. They didn't have the concept.
Yeah.
You know, you went to the temple because that's where they killed the animals and sacrificed the animals, and they sold the meat.
Right.
Okay? And what Paul is addressing here is the Corinthians feared buying and consuming that meat that had been sacrificed to a pagan god.
Right.
To an idol.
Right.
That's exactly what is going on here.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Okay, so then verse 8, but food commends, the word is meat here, but we understand the word meat in a broader sense, but food
right.
commends.
Well,
go ahead.
That's true. In the 1600s, the Englishman that translated the KJV and other translations that are that old, the word meat had a wider use than just flesh.
Right.
However, the Greek word here is broma, and that comes from a verb, bibrosko, which means to eat.
Okay.
And broma means anything which is commonly eaten.
Right.
Where the words for meat in Greek are either kreos or sarx, and both of them mean animal flesh.
Okay.
Or whether it be animal or human, that
right.
it means flesh.
Yes.
And that would mean meat in today's language.
Yes.
But this
yes.
is broma, and it's food.
Right. Okay. But food commends us not to God, for neither if we eat are we the better, neither if we eat not are we the worse. So in other words, food is, you know, literal food has really nothing to do with our worship of Yahweh.
Right. This says food does not bring us to terms with Yahweh.
Right.
Neither do we have an advantage if we would eat,
right,
nor do we come short if we would not eat.
Right. But this, of course, is not true of the Pharisees and most of the religions of the ancient world, where, you know, it's absolutely required that you had to dedicate your food to the, whatever god you worship, and if you weren't doing that, you weren't considered a good religious person.
Oh, right, absolutely.
Yeah. So Paul is saying, well, none of that matters at all to Christianity. None of it. Okay? So forget about it. Verse 9, but take heed lest by any means this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to them that are weak. Okay? What's exactly the liberty? Obviously meaning that you have the right to choose to eat this food or not.
Well, right. The word liberty is exousia, and it's actually license.
Okay.
And it's, you know, that because of your faith, you have a license to eat what you think will sustain you.
Right.
And you know that Yahweh is the provider of all things.
Okay.
Okay?
Now,
where these, you know, when you're dedicating your food to a pagan god, you're thanking that pagan god for your meal.
Right. Right. Now, here, it sounds to many of the Paul bashers that Paul is saying, okay, it's okay to eat meat dedicated to idols. Okay? And therefore, he is some kind of you know, anti-Yahwist or anti-Christian for saying this. But just before that, didn't he say, it doesn't matter because
these
idols aren't real anyway, so what does it matter who it's been dedicated to? It hasn't affected the meat in any way.
Right, and the issue is that Christians, who were mostly poor back then,
right,
just like Christian identity people are mostly poor today.
Yeah, tell me
about
it.
Well, real Christians were mostly poor back then, okay?
Yes, right.
It ain't, nothing's changed here, okay?
Right.
It's the way it is. Now, these people, they couldn't afford their own farms.
Yes.
Or estates to raise animals and kill animals. And the issue is that you could not buy meat. You could not obtain meat.
Yeah.
Unless you purchased it
right
at a pagan temple.
Right.
So, you know, the alternative is to do without food or to eat the meat that comes from a pagan temple.
Right. Okay.
And that's the concern, and that's Paul's telling them, look, so it came from a pagan temple. Big deal.
Right.
That idol is nothing to you.
Right.
So don't worry about it.
Even if 10 naked virgins, Wiccans, danced around that stake for 3 hours, it will not have changed that piece of meat, right?
Well, right. It's still a steak.
Yeah,
right.
It's still a steak. Exactly. No different from the time before they started dancing around it from the time after they finished dancing around it. It's just a piece of steak, okay? Verse 10, for if any man see you which has knowledge sit at meat or at dinner, at your food time, in the idol's temple, shall not the conscience of him which is weak be emboldened to eat those things which are offered to idols? Now, this seems to add a new wrinkle here. Are you sitting in the temple while you're eating at this? Or what's going on here? Verse 10.
Well, right. It's, you know, you shouldn't be seen honoring the idol, not because you're going to go to hell
right
because you ate it, but because you're encouraging your weak brethren, you know, that it's an acceptable practice.
Right, right. So you shouldn't eat in that temple because it may appear that you're honoring whatever god that temple is dedicated to. You just go get your meat and leave. and don't start partaking of this idol worship, even seem to be partaking of it. Okay, verse 11.
Well, right. You know, it's like today people always rationalize going, oh, I'm just going to go to one football game.
Right.
You know, and it's the same thing.
But if your team wins that game, then you got to go to the next one. Okay, verse 11. And through your knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom it's a question. And through your knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. In other words, set a better example than that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, verse 12. But when you sin so against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. So what he's saying here, it's not necessarily the eating of the meat that's dedicated, but the fact that you're partaking of it in a public manner.
And
yes.
Right, and challenging the faith of your brethren, which
right
is the worst sin.
Right, right. Yeah. Okay, so wherefore, if meat make my brother to offend, I will eat no flesh while the world stands, lest I make my brother to offend. So in other words, if it's a real problem for you, don't eat that meat.
Right.
Get it from somewhere else.
And that's exactly what he's saying.
Right. So the Paul bashers are wrong again.
Well, the Paul bashers are always wrong.
Okay. All right.
They're not right about anything.
Okay. I have a new person, Martin 41. Do you recognize Martin 41? There's a delay factor there. Martin 41, are you there?
Yes, I sure am.
You have a question or comment?
Actually, not at the moment.
Okay.
Being knocked off off the computer.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'll just put you on mute again. Okay. Thank you. Okay. All right. So now we're all the way to chapter 9. Okay. Verse 1. Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not you my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle to others, yet doubtless I am to you, for the seal of my apostleship are you in the Lord. Of course, this sounds like he's bragging. What do you have to say about these two verses here, Bill?
Well, he's saying, even if to others I am not an ambassador, yet at any rate to you I am.
Okay.
Indeed, the assurance of my message. The assurance of my message, not of his person.
Yes.
He's giving praise to the message.
Yes.
Okay. And that word message is apostole or apostleship in EAV.
Okay.
And I have notes on it in my Romans translation on it that I didn't notice it, or I would have copied them over to here. But the word is actually translated message on several occasions in the Greek Septuagint.
Okay, but here it's translated as apostleship.
Apostleship.
Okay.
But it's his message. The apostole is the message that the ambassador has.
Okay, well, that deflates the Paul bashers who say, well, he's bragging about being apostle when he's really just talking about the message that he's delivering.
Right, he's giving the praise to the message.
That's
Indeed, the assurance of my message is you in Christ, in the prince, which is the way my translation reads.
Very good. Okay, verse 3, my answer to them that do examine me is this, have we not, cross-examine, would be a good word there too, have we not power to eat and to drink? Have
well,
we not
license.
Right.
Have we not license to eat and to drink?
Okay, or the liberty, yeah, license or liberty. Have we not power to eat or lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles? And as brethren of Yahweh and Cephas?
I have to say here, there's something in this message that isn't that obvious.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
In my translation, it says, do we not have license to always have with us a kinswoman, a wife, as also the other ambassadors, and the brethren of the prince and Cephas?
Okay.
Which is Peter.
Okay.
Peter had a wife. Peter was married.
I see.
Now what he's saying here, and it's true that he has license to do these things. And what he's talking about, what this is leading into, is whether he should live off the assembly or whether he supports himself.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to see that in the next 8 verses. However, in this one verse, I'd like to take a detour. Here, Adelphane is the literal word for sister.
I see.
And my translation, it's kinswoman.
Uh-huh.
So as not to be confused with a literal sister.
Right.
Because this word was never used in the spiritual sense by Greeks.
Okay.
It was always used either in the wider racial sense as any woman of your race, you know, any woman of your kin.
Yes.
Or in the sense of a filial sister, and that, you know, a daughter by your parents.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And what Paul's saying here, and it's not that obvious, but what he's saying is that your wife should be of your race.
Right. Okay.
You know what I mean? If you had a wife, she would be expected to be of
your sister.
Kin, of your race.
So your sister in your race, yes.
Right.
All right, so verse 6, or I only and Barnabas have not we power to forbear working or to refrain from working? So is he asking for donations here?
Well, yeah, no, he's saying that he has the ability to.
Okay.
He says, or do only Barnabas and I not have license to work? In
uh-huh.
other words, he can work, so he he's going to show that he will.
Okay.
You know, the Paul bashers accuse Paul of being a freeloader.
Right.
And they're the freeloaders.
Okay.
They're the ones that insist that their congregants tithe.
Right. Right.
Okay. But
okay.
Paul never asked for a tithe.
Okay. Yes. Yahweh provides. Verse 7. Who goes on a warfare any time at his own charges? Who pays for his own wages when he goes to war? Who plants the vineyard and eats not of the fruit thereof? Or who feeds the flock and eats not of the milk of the flock? Okay, these are rhetorical questions. And let me just read verse 8. Say I these things as a man, or says not the law the same also? Okay, what does he mean here?
He's saying, do I speak these things out of his human need,
uh-huh.
or does not the law also say these things?
Yes.
And he goes on to quote Moses, as it is written, you will not muzzle a treading ox.
Okay.
And he asks another rhetorical question. Does Yahweh care for the ox?
Yeah, right.
And when he made that, or does he speak on account of us all? For on account of us it was written that he who is plowing is obliged to plow in expectation, and he who is threshing in expectation to take part of it. And he's actually quoting there, he's quoting Deuteronomy 25:4.
Okay.
He's quoting from the Old Testament and using it as metaphorically, comparing it to his Christian ministry.
Uh-huh.
You know, Paul is explaining that Christian pastors can expect to have their worldly needs met by their congregations.
Okay.
They can expect this.
Okay.
That doesn't mean Paul's insisting on it.
Right, right.
Because that is not the example which he set.
Right, well, that's how the Levitical priesthood was sustained. By the
10% tithe.
Yes,
right.
The
and Paul, it's the Paul bashers bash Paul for this, yet they too are,
they
are too, they are too, yes, they do tithe, and they also are too ignorant to realize that when Yahshua Christ sent his disciples out to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, that he sent them without money,
right,
without even an extra cloak, and without any sort of provisions.
Except for a sword. He insisted
right,
that they
and
carry
that's
a sword.
Matthew 10, verses 1 through 20.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so if Joshua is sending his apostles out with no provisions, he certainly expects them to live off of
right.
the people that they bring the gospel
right,
to.
Right, yeah, and then if there's towns that don't accept them, they should turn around and wipe their feet and move on.
well, right, but you know something? That says when you enter into a town, and I could go over it in my translation, if anybody in the town is unworthy,
uh-huh.
it doesn't mean if anybody in the town doesn't believe.
Right.
I mean, in other words, if you walked into downtown Jersey City, you ain't going to find anybody worthy. I'm sorry.
It's like Sodom and Gomorrah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
You might find a couple of queer yuppies on some brownstone
right.
somewhere. But.
Or some people on drugs that might be interested in what you're saying. Verse 10, or says he it altogether for our sakes? For our sakes, no doubt, this is written, that he that plows should plow in hope, and that he that threshes in hope should partake of his hope. In other words, he should be rewarded for what he's doing.
Well, right, and that's, you know, that's what he's saying is scriptural.
Yes.
And then he's going to go on to say that instead, he basically worked for his living, that he did not live off the assembly.
Yes.
That's Paul's example, and we're going to see that in a few verses.
Right, and he paid many ways, in different ways, for what he was doing. You know, so it wasn't like, because he was being imprisoned, he was being beaten, he was being chased from one town to another. So it's not
Absolutely.
Like this was
and
an easy life.
The
yeah.
only time Paul collected money, and he goes into that at length, from the congregations of Christians in the Greek world was not for himself.
Yes.
It was to bring it to the poor of the saints in Jerusalem.
Right.
And
right.
that's because if anybody would look at what was going on in Jerusalem at the time, those people were shut-ins. They couldn't go out and work.
Uh-huh.
The Jews were trying to kill them.
Right.
And in fact, the Jews did kill a lot of them.
Right. Right, very good. Okay, verse 11, if we have sown to you spiritual things, is it a great thing if we shall reap your carnal things? That's kind of a paraphrase of seek first the kingdom and all these things shall be added unto you.
Absolutely. Paul's teaching is absolutely in line with Yahshua's at every turn.
Mm-hmm. Okay, verse 12, if others be partakers of this power over you, are not we rather... Let me just finish the verse. Nevertheless, we have not used this power, but suffer all things, lest we should hinder the gospel of Christ. Okay, are not we rather? What in the world does that sentence construction
if
mean?
Others, if others of authority are partaking of you, still more not we? In other words, shouldn't we? And I translate that perfectly literally.
Okay.
And I try to not to add any words to the text.
Yeah.
And still capture the meaning. If others of authority are partaking of you.
Okay.
In other words, well, the pagan temples partook of them for sure.
Sure.
Because they required their donations also. And the pagan temples of Greece were also great banking centers, by the way.
Okay.
Okay.
Right, yeah.
They were,
Jerusalem.
they were also pimp. They were pimp outfits.
Yes.
I mean, women were dedicated to the temple as children by their fathers, and they were raised up to be temple prostitutes.
Yeah, and I bet those fathers got a cut from the priests.
And in a lot of cases, boys were trained up to be temple prostitutes.
Okay, okay.
This is ancient Greece we're talking about.
Right, yeah. So it sounds like in verse 12, he's talking, aren't you being taken advantage of? Aren't these people
advantage
of you?
Well, right, other people of authority are partaking of them, and they pay their taxes, and tax farmers, and the tax farmers earn a living off them, and the temple priests have earned livings off them. And Paul's saying we deserve it more.
Right, right. Okay, verse 13, do you not know that they which minister about holy things live of the things of the temple, and they which wait at the altar are partakers with the altar?
Well, I had to say you skipped about two-thirds of verse 12.
Oh, I did? I thought I read the whole thing.
Rather, we have not used this authority, Paul says in verse 12.
Oh, okay.
If others of authority are partaking of you, still more not we? In other words, shouldn't we still even more?
Right.
And then
right.
he says, rather, we have not used this authority. In other words, Paul has not taken any money from the Corinthians.
Right. Yeah.
But
so all the Corinthians are being a money grubber. Not yet, anyway.
Right. Okay. And they're Paul is absolutely – all the accusations of the Paul basher about Paul being a money grubber are – lies.
Right. Okay.
They're direct, straight lies. The Paul bashers are no better than Jews.
Right. Okay.
The false accusation is a diabolos, is a devil, and that's what the Paul bashers are.
Right. Yeah. So they certainly haven't read these verses carefully if that's what they're basing this on. Okay. Verse 14.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Even so has Yahweh ordained they which preach the gospel should live of the gospel. That's fairly straightforward there.
Well, that's when do not take a bag and away your copper for your belt. Matthew 10:1-20.
Uh-huh. Okay, verse 15. But I have used none of these things, neither have I written these things, that it should be so done to me, for it were better for me to die than that any man should make my glorying void. Okay, what is verse 15 saying?
But I have not indulged in, but I have indulged in not one of those things. In other words, he didn't take any money. He didn't burden the assembly at all.
Yes.
Now, I have not written these things that in this way it would be, in other words, he's not asking them for money.
Right.
Now, I have not written these things that in this way it would be with me.
Okay.
Indeed, for me to be slain is still more admirable than for anyone to make void my reason to boast. Now, he's about to explain what his reason to boast.
Okay. Well, let me read 16 and 17 here. For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is to me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward. But if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed to me. Okay.
Well, that word dispensation just don't belong in the Bible at all.
Okay. But the dispensationalists like it.
Yeah. They could dispense of it.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
16. Therefore, if I announce the good message, it is not a subject of boasting to me. In necessity, it is laid upon me, since woe to me it is if I would not announce the good message. In other words, Paul felt like he was completely, absolutely impelled, forced. He had no choice.
Right.
After his road to Damascus event,
yes,
and the knowledge and the revelation that was given to him, he had no choice but to go preach the good message.
Right. Well, I mean, don't you feel the same way? I feel this way, too. You know, once I learned the Christian identity message and got what the Bible was really saying, I couldn't stop preaching it.
That's because the kingdom of heaven is like a costly pearl. And once it's found, you're going to want to give up everything for the pursuit of that pearl.
Right, right. I mean, there's nothing else matters. Nothing else
exactly
matters.
Exactly, and that's my point. And that's the point of Yahshua made in the parable.
And that's what Paul is saying here.
Now, Paul says in 17, for if I do this readily, I have a reward.
Yes.
But if involuntarily I had been entrusted with the management of the family, that's what that word oikonomia means.
Okay.
Not dispensation of whatever. It's the management of a family.
Okay.
What then is my reward?
Yeah, now of the, let me just read verse 17 again, because there are three words here in italics, meaning that they are not in the original Greek, and they're added by the translators. And so this is, from what you're saying, this is really a horrible translation. Anyway, here's the King James Version again. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward, but if against my will, a dispensation of the gospel is committed to me. So in other words, it doesn't make any sense, because if he does it against his own will, he's saying, well, then I'm entrusted to dispense the gospel to the people. But that doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm sitting here and looking at the Greek, and my translation doesn't add a word.
Yes.
For if I do this readily, I have a reward.
Yes.
But if involuntarily I had been entrusted with the oikonomion, which is the management of a family, what then is my reward?
Yes. Okay. Well, in other words, he would have been.
That first clause is the beginning of 18. What then is my reward?
Okay. What is my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel.
Well, what then is my reward? I have that as the end of 17.
Okay.
And that being a rhetorical question.
Interesting. Okay.
And then the next sentence is announcing the good message. And he's telling us what his reward is, okay?
Yes.
Announcing the good message, that I would set forth the good message without expense, with respect not to abuse my authority in the good message.
Okay. Yes. Right. And then now, I guess we could talk about, let's say, some of these televangelists, especially the ones with the mega churches. Don't you think that when they get all this money, like in many cases millions of dollars, that it might go to their heads, and they might
Absolutely.
Think themselves more influential than they really are?
And it corrupts them immediately, and most of the money they get is corrupt.
That's right.
I mean, when Oral Roberts stood up there and said, give me $2 million or God's going to kill me tomorrow, he got the money from a Florida dog track owner. That's the wages of sin.
Yeah, right. There you go.
That's the wages of sin. There's no doubt.
But even the Pharisees threw away the 30 pieces of silver.
Right.
Of blood money.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
And even Judas gave it back, so they could throw
right,
it away.
Exactly.
But Oral Roberts went all the way to the bank with it.
Hey, it's $2 million, man. Verse 19, for though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant to all, that I might gain the more. And, of course, he's talking about spiritual gaining here.
Well, when he says, therefore, being free from all, he means that he's obliged to no one because he didn't take money from anyone.
Right, right. Okay. And so that anybody he gains or wins to the gospel will be, you know, free from taint because he didn't accept any money for it.
Well, right. And modern churches and modern universities, they take all kinds of money from all kinds of big corporate donors.
Right.
And then they do the will of their donors.
And from Jewish so-called philanthropies.
Well, right. I was going there next. That's
okay.
That's how Wall Street, that's how the international bankers and the foundations like the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, that's how they got their grips on academia here.
Right.
And on the ministry here.
That's right. That's right.
How they gained control of it.
Well, they established the National Council of Churches, which was a Rockefeller institution from the very beginning, and that grew into the World Council of Churches. And all those institutions teach is atheism, set to Christian jargon. Okay? Worship of their god, Moloch, which is probably their true god. Okay? Verse 20, and to the Jews and to the Judeans I became as a Judean, that I might gain the Judeans. To them that are under the law is under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. And this is the big one that the Paul bashers love to throw at him, that, okay, I'm teaching to the Jews. In fact, what they say is, well, I say one thing to the Jews, and I say something else to the non-Jews. You're a hypocrite, Paul.
Right, but he's not a hypocrite at all, because Paul was learned in the Hebrew ways, and he was extremely learned and well-read in Greek literature,
yes.
in the pagan classical literature. So Paul had the unique ability to be able to preach the gospel in the historical context that the Greek pagans needed it in.
Right.
And convert them to Christianity.
He was able to speak their language.
Exactly.
Yes.
He was able to speak their language better than most of them.
Right. Right.
He quoted their books constantly.
Yeah.
Paul quoted all kinds of Greek classics.
Yeah.
He drew his allusions in his letters from Greek classics.
Right.
Paul quoted Aratus, Epimenides, Euripides, Menander, Heraclitus, Xenophon, Livy, and Cicero.
Right.
That's my short list.
Right, right. So if I were to, let's say, do a lecture at Harvard, I could use 20-letter words, which I wouldn't use in Tennessee.
Well, right. And that's just being honest.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. If you spoke to a bunch of good old boys from Kentucky, you would be a lot more successful. You don't want to sound like a northern city slicker,
right.
Imitating them.
Certainly.
But if you can speak on their terms,
yeah.
you have a much better chance to reach them.
Yeah, that's all he's saying in verse 20, that he's speaking their language.
He's
not being hypocritical at all. Yeah.
He could speak to the Judeans. He knew the law of
yeah.
the Judeans. He knew
yeah.
the customs of the Judeans, and he knew what they believed.
Right. So
he also knew all that of the Greeks.
Sure, sure. So you can see how the Paul bashers just pile on more accusations.
Well, they're just like
Jew
prosecutors. You know, I was indicted 11 counts.
Okay.
And they threw in the kitchen sink. I swear it was in the list. And that's what the Paul bashers do to Paul. They're
right.
no better than Jew prosecutors.
Right. Okay, verse 21. To them that are without the law, as without the law, being not without law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without the law. Of course, he's talking to the dispersed Israelites who did not have the law in their possession.
Right, they were outside of the law.
Yeah. Okay, verse 20.
They were rejected from the community of Yahweh.
Right, right. And they weren't practicing the ritual law at all, you know, for the 745 years previous.
Well, they were practicing rituals, but not for the purposes of the law.
Right,
you know?
Yeah, they're
and we're about to get into that here in the next chapter.
Yeah, they adopted the pagan rituals. Okay, verse 22. To the weak became as I weak, that I might gain the weak. I have made all things to all men, that I might be all that might... that I might by all means save some. Okay, verse 22. Your explanation here.
Well, it just I became weak to the weak, that I would gain the weak.
Okay.
And it's, you know, the King James translated kind of perfectly literally, to all I have become all things in order that of all I will preserve some.
Okay, yeah.
So and that was Paul's only hope.
Right.
In other words, we should not have the hope
right.
that we're going to go out and convert the entire country.
Right,
it ain't
yeah.
going to happen. Paul's saying, you know, if he could only preserve some out of the entire group,
right?
That's the best thing. That's
yeah.
the best we could do, too.
So, in general, he's saying, I'm doing what I can to reach you people. I'm not going to reach all of you. I'm going to do my best to reach as many as I can, in other words, is all he's really saying here.
Absolutely.
Okay, verse 3. Yes.
I have to address something in the forum. I was incarcerated for 12 years for a civil rights violation because I allegedly killed an alien or assisted in the death of an alien.
Okay.
That's why I went to prison.
Okay. And it didn't involve double jeopardy at some point, too, where?
Oh, I was tried by the state and dismissed.
Okay.
And the feds picked the case up. The state didn't have a chance, but the feds, they manufacture cases. They don't need evidence.
Right, right. Okay. All right, verse 23, and this I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Now know you, not that they which run in the race run all, but one receives the prize. So run that you may obtain. So in other words, you know, you do the best you can. You want to win the race.
Absolutely.
Okay, verse 25. And every man that strives for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible.
Right. Well, what he's saying is that every man that competes, he trains his body.
Yes.
And we should do the same thing.
Yes.
And you can't train your body watching porno, and you can't train your body sucking down bottles of alcohol, or even
yeah.
eating swine.
Right,
A sound body is a sound mind is a healthy body, and a sound body is a healthy mind.
Right. So he's encouraging us to have healthy bodies. And you can't do that by eating pork and, as you say, guzzling down beer after beer after beer. Okay, 26. I therefore so run not as uncertainly, so fight I not as the one that beats the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into, this is horrible language, and bring it into subjection, lest that by any means when I have preached to others, I myself should be cast away. Okay, clarify all that, please.
Well, he's saying that, all right, from 25, but all who are contending in all things have self-control.
Yes.
So then those people, in order that they would receive a corruptible crown, in other words, he's talking about athletes competing for a prize.
Right.
But we, an incorruptible.
Right.
He's telling his congregants, the Corinthians, to train your bodies for the achievement of the incorruptible
right.
crown.
Right.
So accordingly, in that manner, I run not as if secretly.
Yes.
In that manner, I spar not as if thrashing air. In other words, he's saying he's taking people on.
Yes.
He is confronting people
okay.
to disseminate the gospel.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
He's not doing this in secret. He's doing it in the public square.
Right.
He
right.
spoke in the public square at Athens. I mean,
yes.
you can't
yes.
get much more public than that.
Yeah.
And he's saying that he doesn't fight as if he's thrashing air. In other words, he's facing his adversaries.
Right. So how do these modern Judeo-Christians get the idea that you're not supposed to offend people by preaching the gospel?
Right. We absolutely have to offend people by preaching the gospel and not care about who we offend.
Yeah, that's right. That's
and he's
right.
saying that he beats his body and brings it into subjection. In other words, you know, if you got to go without if you got to go without that meal, you go without it sometimes.
Right.
That's the way
right.
it is.
Yeah.
If you got to walk 20 miles to the next city,
right.
you get up and you do it. You don't sit and whine about it.
Right.
And he's saying, lest perchance I, having proclaimed to others, myself should be found not standing the test. In
yeah.
other words, you're telling other people to do this. You better be doing it yourself.
Right, right, yeah. I mean, you can get that meaning from these three verses, but it's very difficult to extract it from this King James translation here. Okay, chapter 10, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that you should be ignorant how that all our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. Now, it's very obvious here that he's addressing his brethren, whether they are Judahites or Israelites of the dispersion, as being descendants of the people that came out of Egypt.
Now, last night in Luke 2:29-32, we saw Luke write, and Luke's Paul's partner, and Luke is writing Paul's gospel.
Right.
And we saw Luke write that the you know, Yahshua Christ was the light for a revelation of the nations.
Yes.
And the whole theme of the Bible is that Abraham was chosen out of all the white people on the earth, that his offspring would become many nations.
Right.
And here we see in Luke last night, that's Paul's gospel, and here we see that very thing in effect. Paul is telling these Arian,
yes.
Dorian, Corinthian, Greek people that they are the children of the Exodus.
Right.
The Paul bashers want to deny this.
Uh-huh.
They must be Jews.
right.
That's
right.
All they could be is Jews.
Yeah, or they certainly misunderstand. Well, what they've done, what's actually happened, in my opinion, Bill, is they've simply fallen for the false interpretations of the Paul worshipers.
Well, you know,
okay.
they claim to know. Yahshua Christ told the Pharisees, you say you see,
yes.
therefore you'll die in your sins.
That's right. Yes, yes. So, yeah, so they need to reread the gospel of Paul.
They need a liquid
right.
plumber. They need to drink a bottle of liquid plumber.
yeah, right.
Clean the crap
well,
out of their
sometimes a good stiff shot of whiskey will clear your
yeah,
head.
Yeah, about a keg.
Okay. And we're all baptized to Moses in the cloud and the sea. Cannot possibly be anybody but Israelites. Okay,
right.
verse
and
3. Go ahead.
I'd like to take a minute. And the Corinthians are Dorian Greeks by race.
Okay.
The Dorian Greeks can only be found at the time, you know, of Homer on the when Homer's writing about 1180, he's writing in 600 BC about events that happened in 1185 BC. And at the time of Homer, the Dorian Greeks were only on Crete.
Okay.
Homer described in full the entire Greek world in two long poems, the Iliad and the Odyssey.
Uh-huh.
He told us everybody that was on the Danaan side of the fight of the Battle of Troy, everybody that was on the Dardan or the Trojan side of the fight,
uh-huh.
all of their allies, and he describes the whole known world. And all of the geographers, Strabo, the most noble of Greek geographers, he calls Homer ex arches.
Okay.
From the beginning.
Okay.
In other words, to Strabo, Homer was the foundation of all Greek historiography and geography.
Okay.
Okay? And Homer describes the whole Greek world, and the Dorians are only found on Crete, a little island halfway between Palestine and Greece proper.
Yeah.
And I would say that's because they came from, and they called Dorians because they came from Dor in Palestine.
Right.
It's the only place they could have come from.
Yeah, which is just a short boat ride from Palestine to Crete.
Now, the proof of that is the letter that the Dorian Spartan, we have Dorian Corinthians and Dorian Spartans. I mean, you know, they lived in more than one city in Greece, these Dorians. They actually lived in quite a few of them that they came to inhabit.
Right.
The Dorian Spartan king of the second century that wrote the letter back to Jerusalem saying that we know we are Abraham's seed.
Okay.
And we know we're related to you and you're our brethren.
Right.
And that letter is answered in that same light in the book of Maccabees. It's recorded,
yes.
The answer to it. And the letter itself is recorded in Josephus. And the answer is recorded in Josephus.
Right.
And the historian. So it's very clear from Homer that these Dorians are in a position to have come only from Palestine.
Right.
Or some point beyond the island of Crete. And two generations after the Trojan War, they're powerful enough to, from this tiny island, to conquer all of Greece. And they do it. And we have the proof in Josephus from the second century. And now we have Paul telling us that these people are the children of the Exodus.
Right, right. Okay. What was going on in Israel proper at that time? What era was it? Was it the time of David or Solomon?
At the time of the Trojan War, it's right smack in the middle of the Judges period.
Okay.
It's 11. The Trojan War, supposedly by all Greek chronographers from as far back as Thucydides, ended in 1185, 1184 B.C.
Okay.
And it was a 20-year war. So you know, it was 1200 B.C. David takes the throne around there are varying chronologies, and the earliest he could take the throne is about 1040 B.C.,
okay, so
and the latest would be about 1000 B.C.
So the Trojan Wars were a few hundred years then before the monarchy was established in Israel.
Right.
Okay.
And somewhere in my writing somewhere I give the judge that I thought, you know.
Yeah, that answered the letter? Yeah, okay.
The judge that whose reign the Trojan War was during, and I estimate that. But
okay.
the Dorian conquest of Greece happened two generations, by all accounts, after the Trojan War. So that's about 100 years before Saul becomes king in Israel.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Verse 3, and did all eat the same spiritual meat? Again, talking about the spiritual food, the Ten Commandments, all of various instructions of Moses.
Or the manna.
Yes, and the manna, right?
Which represented spiritual food,
I have a note here, Exodus 16:15, but I didn't get a chance to look it up. And did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ? Correct?
Yes.
Correct translation of anointed here?
Yeah, yes, that's what I have in my translation.
Okay.
I think Paul is using it metaphorically.
Okay.
That Christ was the pillar of fire, and Yahweh and Christ are one in my view of the Bible, and Paul is using this metaphorically.
Yes. Okay.
But they also drank from a rock that Moses struck.
Sure. The literal water.
So Paul's making a metaphor.
Yes. Okay, verse 5. But with many of them, God was not well pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Okay, well, yeah, the, originally when they were supposed to take over Canaan land, and they confronted the giants, and they were so afraid of these giants that they declined to attack them, which was what Yahweh wanted them to do. Consequently, they had to wander in the wilderness for 40 years, right? Is that
right.
What they're talking about here?
Right. And
yes.
Paul is definitely, you know, these Corinthians are Israel, because Luke
right.
says four times in chapter 1 that the Bible is, the promises are exclusive to the children of Israel.
Right. And, of course, this cannot possibly include any other people on the planet besides those Israelites. So
absolutely.
He's specifically saying here that he's addressing Israelites exclusively. Verse 6. Now, these things were our examples to the intent we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So we shouldn't act like our ancestors did. Verse 7, neither be you idolaters as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Neither let us commit fornication as some of them committed and fell in one day 3,000. Very specific reference here to some fornication going on that caused them to be struck down and killed.
Right. And I have to admit that I have to explain that here there is a discrepancy between Paul's 23,000 and the 24,000 figure that he's of the event he's referring to.
Oh, okay.
That number's 25,900.
Oh, okay.
And you know, quite often pastors, mainstream Christian pastors, make a lot of hay out of that discrepancy.
Right.
But what they miss is first that Paul's telling the Corinthians that they're Israelites.
Yes.
And second, he's telling them not to race mix.
Right.
Neither should we commit fornication. And the only
mm-hmm.
thing that could have been fornication back there in Numbers 25
yes.
was when the sons of Israel joined themselves to the daughters of Moab.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And all these mainstream frauds love to point out this 1,000-person discrepancy.
Yes.
And they missed
the
whole thing about
greater
race
things of the law.
And they indict themselves every time they point at this.
Yes, right. And this could be a scribal error. You never know where this discrepancy occurred. But nevertheless, Paul gets blamed for
it. I think it was by design.
Okay.
I think it was by design so that Yahweh could take John Hagee and smash him.
There you go. Verse 9. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted, and were destroyed of serpents. Neither murmur you, as some of them also murmured, and were destroyed of the destroyer. In other words, you know, learn the lessons of how our ancestors disobeyed, and don't do it yourselves.
Well, right. And another thing I'm going to say is this proves that Paul believed that Christ, Yahshua Christ, was Yahweh
okay.
come in the flesh. That Christ, Yahshua Christ, was Yahweh back there in the desert.
Okay, sure.
How could the people, the children of the Exodus, tempt Christ 2,000 years before he's born, or 1,500
right.
years before he's born.
Right, right. Okay, verse 11. Now all these things happen to them for examples, and they are written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. So in other words, we have to pay close attention to what happened to our ancestors, lest it happen to us.
It is happening to us.
That's right.
The children of Israel are out committing fornication every night.
That's right. That's
it's
right.
going on all over the place.
So he's not saying we can commit fornication. The law has not been abolished. He's telling us, wait.
And he's warning us
things.
That
right.
the same thing is going to happen to us as a result of
that's
it.
That's right. That's exactly what he's saying. Verse 12, wherefore, let him that thinks he stands take heed, lest he fall. We're all saved. Once saved, always saved. Isn't
yeah, well,
Paul
not if you're running around with a nigglet on your hip.
Verse 13, there has no temptation taken you but such as is common to man. Of course, we all experience these temptations, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make way to escape that you may be able to bear it. No, I'd say in general that's true. Most of us aren't tempted beyond our means to avoid or overcome the temptation.
Yeah, well, Christians will have a final opportunity, come out from the midst of them
yes.
and be separate and touch not the unclean people.
Right.
That,
the unclean. The word
thing. Have one more shot at this.
Yes, that word thing, whatever verse you're referring to, I forget where it is, but that is the word thing is added.
I added people.
Okay.
I replied.
I know you did.
And well, that's the context.
Yeah,
it can be shown in
right.
2 Corinthians chapter 6, and we're going to be there in about 5 weeks.
Yeah, if they had added
four.
A word, if they had added a word, they should have added the word people, not thing. Because
well,
it's not an inanimate object. Yes.
It says come out from the midst of them.
Right.
Not of it.
Yes, that's right. That's right. This is how the Bible has been distorted, folks. Verse 14, wherefore, my dearly beloved, flee from idolatry.
Absolutely. And that's, you know,
how can anybody believe that the law has been abolished if idolatry is condemned right here in verse 14?
Absolutely. Fornication is condemned here. Idolatry is condemned here. Partying with the devil, you know, the children sat down to eat and drink and rose up.
Oh, man, I don't know. I can't give up that partying with the devil, Bill. That sounds like too much fun.
Well, you know, you go to Miami, you can watch Caliente on the weekend, or go to Las Vegas.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what they're doing. They're partying with the devil.
That's right. That's right. Verse 15. I speak as to wise men, judge you what I say. Pay close attention to what I'm telling you, folks, now. Don't disregard it. Verse 16, the cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread of which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? Wow, this is classical Christianity here. Devoid of any complications. Verse 17, for we being many are one bread and one body, for we are all partakers of that one bread. Behold, Israel after the flesh.
Or Israel down through the flesh.
Okay.
Or Israel according to the flesh.
Right.
He's talking about genetic Israel, period.
Yes.
And we're going to see in a minute that he's not talking about the Jews.
Right. Okay. Are not they which eat of the sacrifices partakers of the altars? Of course, the Israelites, who are our people, the Caucasian people, not the Jews, are the Israelites of the Old Testament who performed all these sacrifices. Verse 19. What say I then, that the idol is anything, or that which is offered in sacrifice to idols is anything? But I say that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, as a nation sacrifice, they sacrifice to devils and not to God, and I would not that you should have fellowship with devils.
The things which, that whatever the nation sacrifice, Israel down through the flesh.
Yes.
They are the nations.
Yes.
That's who Paul's talking about. The Jews were not going around in the first century sacrificing animals to pagan idols.
No, they weren't.
They weren't doing it. There's not one record of a Jew in Corinth or in Greece or in anywhere in the Roman world at the time of Christ sacrificing animals to pagan idols.
Right.
Paul's talking about the white nations of Europe.
Right.
They are Israel down through the flesh. Paul clearly identifies them here.
Yes.
They're the ones, the Germans, the Scythians, the Celts, the Gauls, the Iberians, the Britons, the Romans, the Parthians,
yes.
The Greeks. They're the ones sacrificing animals to pagan idols.
Right.
They're the ones Paul's identifying here
yes.
as Israel down through the flesh.
Yes. And it's very important, again, that this is an area you must understand, because the historical context is the putting away in punishment of the northern house of Israel for their idol worship and sacrificing to pagan gods.
And the fact that they were still doing that at this time.
Yes. Yeah. And if you don't know that the Israelites were broken up into two houses, you're missing one of the biggest developments in our history.
Well, and that the Jews are only a very, very tiny portion of one of those houses.
Yeah. Well, they claim to be, but they're really not even a portion of it. They're imposters. So if you want to talk about the Judahites who were alive at this time, yes. But not the Jews, because the Jews were Edomites, pretending to be Judahites. So, folks, if you don't understand the history of our people, you cannot possibly understand what Paul is talking about here.
And this revelation of Scripture that we saw here and that we saw last night in Luke chapter 2, you don't find it in Matthew.
Yes.
You don't find it in Mark. You don't find it in John. I mean, John has one line about going to the dispersed of the Greeks to teach the Greeks.
Right, right.
And that's one little hint, but that's the only thing in John.
Right, 735,
Paul,
I believe, yeah.
Paul is the revelator of the identity of the nations that descended from Abraham.
Yes.
Without Paul
the first Israelite.
And without Luke, We would have no proof of that
right.
in our Bible.
Right. You'd have to deduce it from the Old Testament and from history. Yes.
And it would be a very difficult thing to do.
It would be, yes. Yes. Verse 21, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of devils. You cannot be partakers of the Lord's table. And so what did Jesus say? You cannot have two masters.
Right, exactly. And Paul's saying the same thing.
Yes. Verse 22, do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? Are we stronger than he? All things are lawful for me. And here's another problem verse. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but all things edify not. What does verse 23 really say?
Well, you know, just because he has license in Christ that he doesn't really have to follow the law if he doesn't want to because he's still an Israelite, that doesn't mean he should do those things.
Right.
What he's saying from the beginning of this chapter is this. You think you have license in Christ to go eat meat, sacrifice to idols. Fine, go ahead and do it. You're not going to be damned because you do it.
Yes.
You have license to do that. But when you're sitting in a temple at a table with a bunch of idol worshipers,
right.
you're really screwing up.
That's right.
right. You might have license to do that, but you're really screwing up.
Right, right.
And,
so in other words, he's not saying being lawful for me is kind of a difficult construction
he's
here.
He's not using the word lawful.
Okay, what's the correct word
here? He's using the word that there's nomos and there's exousia, and exousia is license, and nomos is law.
Okay.
And he's using exousia. He doesn't use
lawful. Yeah,
the word law
right,
anywhere in this chapter.
Yeah, and so the Paul bashers here jump on this verse and say, oh, okay, all things are lawful. I can do anything I want.
He's
how they interpret this.
He's saying, my translation says, all is possible,
okay,
but all does not profit.
Right.
All is possible, but all does not build.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, Christians aren't bound by the law, but they should want to follow the law.
Right, right.
We should voluntarily follow the law.
Well, they're not bound in the sense that the Israelites were by the temple rituals punishments and judgments.
Sense. Right, but they're also not going to be stoned to death
right.
if they get caught doing these things like they did in the Old Testament.
Right, exactly, exactly. Okay, verse 24, let no man seek his own, but every man another's wealth. Okay, I get it. It doesn't mean that you want to steal their wealth from them, another's fortune or well-being.
No, it says no one must seek for that of himself.
Mm-hmm.
But that of the other. The word wealth ain't in here.
Right.
In other words, I shouldn't seek things for my gain.
Yes.
I should seek things for your gain.
Right, right. And the addition of the word wealth, which is another one that's italicized here in the KJV, again.
They perverse the scripture. They pervert the scripture. The King James translation is horrible, Keith.
Yes. Verse 25, whatsoever is sold in the shambles, that eat. Asking no question for conscience sake, for the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. What's he saying in verse 25?
Now, this goes back to what I said about the meat markets being attached to a temple.
Okay.
The shambles, that's an archaic word for a meat market.
Okay.
okay? And Paul's saying, look, eat everything that's sold in the meat market, by no means making an inquiry. In other words, don't stroll into the meat market and say, was this roast beef? Was this sacrificed to Zeus?
yes.
You know, just buy it and leave.
Yeah, and don't make a big deal out of it, because even if it was sacrificed to Zeus, it hasn't changed.
well, today's exact equivalent.
Yes.
You go buy me a chicken that wasn't butchered by a Mexican.
Right.
Okay?
right.
I really don't want to eat a chicken that was butchered by a Mexican.
right.
But the only choice...
Or by a kosher butcher Jew.
Oh, right. But the only choice is to not eat chicken.
Right.
So Paul's saying, just go buy the chicken.
Right, don't worry about
and
it.
And keep your mouth shut and leave.
Yeah, the rest is nonsense anyway. Verse 27, if any of them that believe not bid you to a feast, and you be disposed to go, whatsoever set before you eat, asking no question for conscience sake. Obviously, he's continuing the discussion about don't worry about it being sacrificed to idols. But what about if the feast is a bunch of pagan people, you shouldn't be going there anyway, right?
Yeah, you should probably skip that feast.
That's right. Verse 28. But if any man say to you, this is offered in sacrifice to idols, eat not for his sake that showed it, and for conscience sake, for earth, for the earth is the Lord's, and basically he's answering the question I raised about verse 27. Verse 29, conscience, I say, not your own, but of the other, for why is my liberty judged for another man's conscience? So, in other words, don't be setting a bad example for your brethren.
Exactly.
Verse
exactly.
30. Yeah, verse 30. For if I by grace be a partaker, why am I evil spoken of for that for which I give thanks? Okay. And so what's he giving, what does he mean here?
Well, he's saying if I partake in thankfulness,
okay,
why am I slandered for that which for which I am thankful?
Right. Okay. And so it's good food. There's nothing wrong with it, even though it was slaughtered by a Mexican butcher.
Right, and we're talking about food. We're not talking about swine.
Right, real food, yes, yes, acceptable food. Verse 31, well, if it's not acceptable food, it's not food.
Right, exactly.
Verse 31, whether therefore you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Give no offense, neither to the Judeans nor to the dispersed. Here's a justifiable translation of Gentiles to the dispersed.
Well, it's not even Gentiles. It's Greeks in the text.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, there's about six or eight occasions where the word Hellene is translated Gentiles in the King James.
Interesting. Okay. I don't know why they translated it. Hellene should have been the proper, or Greek should have been the proper translation.
Absolutely.
Nor to the church of God, even as I please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of many, that they may be saved. So it's a fairly consistent message throughout these three chapters that we've been reading, that Paul is saying, do not do these things for yourself. Do these things for your brothers, for the community, for the greater good of Israel.
Absolutely. And the first verse of chapter 11 belongs at the end of this paragraph.
Okay, well, let's conclude it real quick. Be you followers of me, even as I also am of Christ. Okay, and so I have a note here, imitators, not
yes,
followers.
Yes, it is imitators. And, you know, Paul says be imitators of me in other places, and the Paul bashers slam them for it.
Right, right. Well,
but he's saying become imitators of me just as I also am of Christ. You know, the Corinthians, what he's doing is he's assuring them that he is imitating the ways of Christ.
Right.
Is what he's doing.
Right.
Because they don't have that in their observation.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
They didn't see Christ.
Right. Right. Yeah. And this is what, the historical context is of crucial importance here, because he's talking to people who probably have heard of all the miracles. They heard the stories that Jesus came, the Messiah came, and people flooded to be healed, and they flooded to Palestine to hear him speak, and just to look upon him and possibly touch him. And you know, these people heard these rumors. And
well,
so,
you know, there's an account in the gospel about certain Greeks that wanted to meet Christ.
Sure, sure.
And I forget exactly where it is, but I mean, that's
an act.
The apostles did not chase them away.
That's right.
Like they chased the Canaanite woman.
Right, right.
Okay?
Right.
There's a clear example there of who's who.
Yeah, right,
and,
right.
And rather, they wanted to get, you know, they inquired of each other, should we do this or,
right.
You know.
Right, and then the Gospel of James, or the Book of James, opens up with the statement to the 12 tribes scattered abroad, greetings. So James understood that the dispersed Israelites were scattered abroad.
Right.
And
you know,
they
James
were.
makes that, and Peter's epistles aren't even to the circumcision.
Okay.
Peter's the apostle of the circumcision.
Yes.
But if you read his epistles, they're written to the sojourners of Asia Minor.
Right.
Everywhere he mentions are the cities that Paul established assemblies in.
Right, right.
But even with Peter and with James, there's no identity message without Paul and Luke.
Right. Well, I mean, James 1:1 is totally overlooked. In fact, I have to warn people, if you get a more modern translation, the King James actually is very good in that particular translation. But newer translations will say, instead of Israel, to the Jews scattered abroad.
Well, right. James's epistle is good to show who the message is to.
Right.
But it's not good to show who those tribes are.
Right, right.
And Paul is the glue, and he's the only glue, really,
yes,
that binds the gospel
right.
to the dispersed Israelites.
Yeah, so you always have to pay attention to the context. Who is this epistle written to? And if you pay close attention, you will find out in every case it's Israelites and not the masses of humanity, as modern Judeo-Christianity likes to pretend.
Or the masses of inhumanity.
Right. Okay, very good. All right, so I think we've covered this. We're doing really good. It's three chapters this evening, and if we continue at this rate, we'll have 1 Corinthians done in the next two shows. But I think we can demonstrate here very, very plainly that, number one, that universalists cannot, I don't know how many verses in 1 Corinthians the universalists like to quote for their,
I haven't seen a universalist quote yet.
Right, yeah, I mean, yeah, 1 Corinthians is sparse material for them. However, the Paul bashers have a lot of material here because of these bad translations.
The Paul bashers are just, they're either Jews or they're stupid. I'm sorry.
Well, there are people, let me put it this way. Most of the Paul bashers that I know have come into identity from either the white nationalist movement or from some fringe group, not from traditional Christianity. Okay?
Right, but I know a handful that I'm really disgusted with that came into it from traditional
yeah.
Christianity.
Yeah,
and one of them I count as a good friend, and,
right.
and I know that's going to suffer because of my recent treatment of his...
Yeah.
Of his philosophical partners in crime.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's the way it is. That's
yeah.
the way it is.
Well, I mean, you know, from our analysis of these three chapters here today, the exclusivist nature of what Paul is saying is just rings out. How can you miss it? I mean, how can you miss it? So, you know, anybody who says that Paul is preaching a universalist gospel in this book of Corinthians, I mean, it's just all wet. You're just not reading carefully. I mean, I even get that out of the King James, you know, without too much difficulty. You know,
right. You could get the message of identity out of the King James.
Yes.
It's not as clear as it should be by
yes.
any means, but
yes.
it is possible to get it.
Yes, yes. But you have to pay really close attention. And in my opinion, where particular verses are unclear, or what Paul is saying is obscure, at that point you have to go, and my favorite is the Moffat translation. I like the Farrar Fenton as well. If you have to, go to a different translation, because in many cases, whether or not the King James translators were good enough Greek scholars to really translate this well, I really have serious doubts, Bill, because so much of this is just gobbledygook the way it's translated. And so, you know, you can't, you know, and so in some cases, the Paul bashers, you do have ammunition, but it's not Paul who translated the work.
Right, it's
yes.
not.
Yes.
There's nothing wrong with any of Paul's words.
Yes.
Every one of Paul's statements is totally in line with Christ, with the law, and where he has to offer, as we saw last week in 1 Corinthians chapter 7.
Yes.
Where he has no example from Christ or the law,
yes.
he admits, this is my opinion.
Right, right, right. And so we have to understand that. And how many preachers today will present their opinion as gospel?
All of them.
Yes.
All of them do. They this is, you know,
yes.
their word is the law.
Right.
And that's blasphemy.
Yeah, exactly it is. Okay. All right, one more time, people asking for your translation. Okay, so give your website and... go ahead.
Christogenos, Christogenos, Christogenos.org. And there is a menu. It's not on the top menu bar. All of my papers that I've written are on the left-hand side menu, and you'll find my English from Hebrew section, my historical essays, my essays on race, the Bible, on Genesis, and my translations are all on the left-hand side menu bar.
All right. Very good. Very good. And now you're also working on trying to publish it in book form with all the scholarly notes that back up your translation. Of course, you don't want to put that out for free. How is that progressing?
Well, you know, so far my book sales after 2 months of being available on my site have amounted to $5.
Oh, okay.
and I'm being honest. And over 100 people have visited the site.
Uh-huh.
And it's my book sales are $5. I'm not lying.
Right.
And
right.
I'll show anybody my PayPal account to prove it. And
right.
Actually, I need to raise money to self-publish my books. And the only way I can think about doing it, I don't have the money. So the only way I could think about doing it is to make my books available in PDF form, and they're on crystalgenia.com.
Okay. Now, is it a downloadable for money? How does that work?
Yeah, you pay PayPal, and it takes you back to the site, and you get a download link in the mail, and it's all spiffy. It works.
Okay. And how much is the download?
Well, I'm asking $12 for my Luke translation. It has 2,500 footnotes.
Okay. Yeah.
$10 for my Paul translation, and $5 for the Christogenia New Testament in one file.
Right.
However, I'm also, you know, if I'm successful, I can't guarantee I'm going to get these books published. I'm going to try to get them at a publish on demand place.
Right.
I've heard you could do it for $400 or $500 or whatever.
Yeah.
And I will keep the program I'm using, the software I'm using, keeps a database, and I'll offer those people the books it cost if I ever get them published.
Right. And I also, folks, have a book for sale. And we, you know, and I think it's proof that we're not salesmen, we're not hawkers, because, you know, we go for, you know, like 10 shows without even mentioning the fact that we have stuff for sale, you know. So it's because we love the scriptures. And, you know, but nevertheless, your support for Bill Fink and the work he has put in to translating the scriptures and clarifying some of these mistranslations, you know, you can get his downloads. Again, you said $12 for the Luke translation, $10 for the what?
For Paul?
Okay. And then $5 for the rest of it?
$5 is the, you know, the Christogenia New Testament in one file.
Oh.
You could download it off my site for free, but you have to download it in 26 files.
Right. Okay. So, however you want to access it, folks, the proper, or how should I put it, the translation which does not have any Catholic or Protestant or evangelical bias, it's only Bill Fink's bias.
Bill Fink's bias is
available online, okay? And it's not a lot of money, and it's definitely worth it to compare the other translations against, okay? So it's very much worth it. And then my book is The Great Impersonation, How the Antichrist Has Deceived the Whole World, in which I basically lay out the history of the Abrahamites versus the Canaanites, okay? It's two seed line from the very beginning, showing that the Adamic people, the Adamic, Aryan, Caucasian Israelites, Hebrews, Shemites, are totally distinct from the Jewish people, and I prove that throughout the book, okay? And there's a lot of identity books that talk about the fact that we Caucasians are the Israelites, but they never talk about the Edomites, the people whom we have enmity, as declared in Genesis 3:15. Okay? And that's the forgotten message of the Bible, the fact that Jesus Christ and even Yahweh has an enemy, and our people have an enemy, and that enemy is still with us. That enemy is trying to kill us, and that enemy is pretending to be us and encouraging our people to race mix in order to destroy us. So that's what my book is about, okay? And so you can get a copy of that for $37. Just go online to my website, and you know, in the bookstore. It's in the store portion of the website, and that's anglo-saxonisrael.com, all right? Okay, so thanks very much for listening, folks. Tomorrow at noon Eastern, my guest will be Greg Howard. We're going to be talking about the Chosen of Enoch, how Enoch teaches the same exclusivist message that we've been presenting on these other shows. And then I forget when Sword Brethren had another show scheduled in the afternoon, and I'll be filling in for him tomorrow afternoon. I guess it's 5 o'clock Eastern or 6 o'clock Eastern, I'm not sure. So So just check Sword Brethren's show, and his code is 31407 on TalkShoe. So
what are we talking about tomorrow?
I'm supposed to have an interview with Miko.
Right.
And I haven't heard from him. I'll send him an email and find out what it is he wanted to talk about.
I was supposed to talk about the scriptures at 6, and I thought we were going to combine the programs. But...
Oh, okay. Oh, well, maybe we can do that. Yes. Okay. So, yeah, I'll give you a call, and you know, we can just in case I can't get a hold of Miko, and so the three of us can be on that show. So that'd be great. Yeah. Okay. All right. So thank you, everybody, for listening. Yahweh bless everybody. And, folks, the truth is out there. Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise God.